It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so, part two.
Yes.
Should we talk more about Dracula?
No.
Dan, or not Dan. Your name is not Dan.
I have a feeling you didn't talk about everything you wanted to talk about last time.
William. No, I think I did. Oh. William was confused how I ended the last episode where I said, buy a ticket to Birds of Prey and then don't see it.
Yeah.
The astute amongst you will understand. I said before that I did not like this movie and I wish I had not seen it, but I'm glad I spent money on it because I want to promote making more female-led movies both behind the camera and in front of the camera.
Sure.
And then we can have ones like this and say, oh, this was just a bad movie, and it doesn't have to be proof of something terrible. So I want to support this kind of movie. I just don't want to experience this movie. So give it money, but don't go see it. Also, give me money, but don't come see me. I mean, I thought I'd put it out there.
Yep. Why not?
I've been noticing a trend over the last, how long have we been doing this podcast? Like 9 years. So I'm going to say the last like 5 years or so.
It's going to be 9 years in,
yeah,
in 4 weeks.
I've been noticing a trend that people who didn't hear it before will listen to it and say they like it. And then they won't listen to it anymore.
That's hard to listen to podcasts if it's not something.
Well, I mean,
if it's not something you're used to doing, like,
yeah,
you know, it would be easy just to listen on your commute a little bit or something. But it's like some people listen to the radio and it doesn't even occur to them to do that.
But like Stu sucks, and gets like 14 episodes behind, but he's still trying. Like these people are just like, no, it's really good, and then they're just like, I haven't gotten around to it.
But you're kind of speaking to the point of it being difficult. I mean, some of the people who do listen don't listen regularly enough to keep up. So you're saying
all listeners suck. No, that's fair. That's fair.
I'm saying that
y'all suck.
Given that some of the people who like to listen get behind, you can understand how it would just take a little bit more for a person to not be able to find time to do it at all.
I got to be honest, the like three or four people who do listen like really consistently, I'm surprised they do. So,
well, they've probably skipped some though.
I don't know. They comment fairly regularly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying not skipped ahead. I'm pretty sure Beth has not listened to all of them, but Beth listens every week now and frequently comments.
Yeah.
And sometimes she's a week or two behind, but still pretty consistent. It's odd. Azhatalin is just insane, but. Hello everyone, welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in my house right now. I feel like there might be others, but I can't see them right now. God damn it. When we were watching Birds of Prey, another thing I hate about Birds of Prey, there was a trailer for the sequel to The Boy.
Yes.
And it reminded me when the fuck did it become allowable to put jump scares in a trailer? Because that used to not be a thing you'd do.
Mm.
Because that's shitty. Because part of the reason I don't see PG-13 horror movies, well, there's a lot of reasons, but one of the big ones is they tend to replace horror with jump scares. Mm. But now they just stick them in the goddamn trailer. So now I can't not watch them. There were like three or four jump scares in that damn trailer.
Were there?
Pissed me off.
Didn't notice.
Yes. Sucked. Mad. For those of you who are just listening for the first time, super weird choice. But also, I say that every time. Like, every episode is a weird choice. But also, this is part two. So go back one episode and make that your first episode, and that will explain to you how the podcast works. Because I'm not going to do it. That guy will do it. Happy Chul Ear. Sorry, I just noticed that Amazon packing tape that I assume says Happy School Year.
Well, the H, S, and Y are up there. See?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, there it is. But it kind of worked, so it's like Happy Chul Ear.
Yeah, I noticed that earlier. By the way, he's Tony.
Go on, Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 466.
Yes.
In four episodes, we'll turn nine.
Yeah. This many.
This many.
Yep. I do have another thing to talk about.
Well, let her rip.
I'm still reading the same book I was reading, but I have determined that as soon as I'm done with that, the next book I am reading, Lovecraft Country, which I've been reading to read for years, and something just popped up with it again recently, and I know they're turning it into a TV show.
TV show, right.
Yeah.
Right. I was wondering, after you said that, I thought, that sounds like recently familiar.
Yes.
TV show.
Yeah. Matt Ruff wrote it, and it's a novel about a black man in Jim Crow era America on a road trip for reasons, and encounters horror both of the Lovecraftian cosmic variety and of the standard Jim Crow era America variety of horror.
Which is interesting considering H.P. Lovecraft was notoriously racist.
Right? That's pretty fun, I think. That's getting him back. Fuck you.
Isn't Jordan Peele directing?
Jordan Peele's involved and J.J. Abrams is involved, so I'm just confused. I don't know, but I'm like, first I'm going to read the book.
I mean, I know Peele's sort of hit or miss, like with Twilight Zone and stuff, but I just like...
In general, I'd still love him. I love him.
Well, and I respect what he was trying to do with Twilight. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely, absolutely.
I like what he's... I totally respect what he's trying to do.
I will still bet on Jordan Peele.
Yeah, me too.
Unequivocally at this point.
Me too. And I'm glad he's getting a chance to try these things out and to put it out there. Because I like that he's pushing the envelope. I think that's great. I wish more people were doing that.
Yeah. He's got shit he wants to say, and I want to hear it. Also, the role-playing campaign I'm running is about to be over.
Oh.
In fact, by the time this airs, it will be over. Mm. Tuesday is going to be the end. Tuesday is literally the final fight in it. And then we are starting a new campaign in the game Blades in the Dark. And I'm very excited for this. This is not a game I have run before. This is not a game they have played before, except for one-shots. I played, I don't think you were involved, at Corridor Con, I played a one-shot of it. I don't think you played with me.
The Corridor Con we went to together,
yes.
We did not play every game together.
Yes, I know.
In fact, I think while you were playing that, I was playing the one about the Russian women who flew airplanes.
Oh, Night Witches or Strike Witches or whatever, yeah.
I was playing that, I think, while you were playing the Knives in the Dark.
Blades in the Dark is... Well, it's become a system now. They made this game called Blades in the Dark, and since then they have made two other games using the same system.
I think you talked about this.
Yes.
When you were going to... You were
when we were thinking about, yeah, and there were a variety of ones, and they've settled on this one, and I've read the book now and all the details, and I'm so excited. It could not be more different than how I have role played up to this point. Like, it's vastly different. It's very much narrative based. Like the mechanics, I don't have nearly as much control over it. The GM is the final say on certain things, but the players have the final say on certain things too. And it's all, they call it fiction first. You say what you're going to do, and then we'll figure out what mechanics to go with it.
Okay.
I don't create a plot at all. You play, the players play a gang of criminals. And there's various different types you could be. In this very gothic, steampunky fantasy version of like Victorian London almost. It's in a fantasy world, but it's that kind of Victorian era thing in a planet, on a world where 1,000 years ago some great cataclysm happened which destroyed the sun, so it's night all the time, and turned the seas into inky blackness, and suddenly ghosts are everywhere, and the dead don't go away after they die. Their spirits turn into ghosts and things like this. Mm. And you live in this giant city, which is protected by these towers that make this lightning shield around it to save you from all the ghosts and things out there. The lightning shield is powered by demon blood that they get out on the ocean, where they kill these things called leviathans and take their blood and all this. And the city is still haunted, so there's still some ghosts, but like the worst ones are outside, and it's all wasteland out there. And you're in the city, and it's this big, steampunky, dark, constantly night city with huge class issues and things like that. And you're just playing a crew of criminals trying to survive and become better, more awesome criminals in this dystopian society. Hmm. And it's very cool to me, and it's very focused on your crew going out and planning jobs and scores, they call them, and like, you know, you plan a mission and you go out and you do it, but you don't actually plan it. The characters plan it, but the players do not. What we do is we just start, and the first thing or whatever comes up and you deal with it, and if it's something tough, you have the power via various mechanisms to create a flashback to say, oh no, earlier we got a tip off from this guy, and so we're actually doing it this way. And it doesn't eliminate that thing, but it can change then what happens. Sure. Success in the dice is very common, but frequently it comes with complications.
Right.
And even failure isn't like you die or something. It makes the situation more complicated and it changes it. And it's very, like, the players get to decide what action they use. There's like 12 different, you'd sort of call them like attributes.
Sure.
You know, like prowling or skirmishing or things like that. Swaying, if you're trying to convince me. They, for any given situation, they decide which one they use. I don't get to decide, even if it sounds ridiculous to me. I get to decide what's called position, which is sort of like how risky it is, and effect, like how much success or failure will actually impact things. Mm. But they get to decide the rest. It seems very neat, and it seems very pro story, pro creativity, pro. It seems like it's going to address a lot of issues I have in GM, what I think are gaps in my GMing style.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to address some complications that my group has, that I think, like, there are certain things my group does now that there are certain members of my group do that I'm like, oh, this fucks up the game. I'm like, I actually think doing that kind of stuff in this game will work well. Mm. The downside is this will not be the system that I use forever and ever, amen, because I also think it is very specific to a certain type of gaming.
Sure.
But that's what we're playing. And so, yeah, no, I'm super excited. But yeah, I don't plan any stories. There's so many different, like, factions in the city, and I keep track of them and, like, what they're up to, like, in terms of what their own motivations are,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. And then I need to, you know, present them opportunities to do shit, but they decide what they want to do, and it's up to them how they progress, and the things they do will change things around, and meanwhile other people will be moving forward their plans, but, like, I don't create, like, a story arc or anything.
Mm.
So I think it's going to be very awesome. I'm very, very excited about that. Oh, and I didn't talk about the other big thing that happened to me.
What's that?
Oh, you're gone. Sunday, while beginning to lean over so that I could grab, but I hadn't yet, that box, which was sitting on the chair you're sitting in, to move it, threw my back out.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that? Did you have to take drugs?
Freaking the fuck out initially.
Mm.
We tried to be calm, but, you know, the last time we had this, it was years of chronic pain and mild abuse of opioids and eventually spinal surgery.
Right.
So, luckily, though, this appears to have been pretty mild.
Oh, okay, good.
It's still happening. When I get up from this chair, it's going to be tricky. But every day is getting better. The first night I didn't sleep very well because like any position I was in my bed, it would hurt and I'd have to switch and stuff like that. But now that's been better. I'm just taking like a leave and stuff like that. But I went to massage therapy yesterday and that has helped a lot. Frequently by the end of the day, the muscles are just tired. Mm-hmm. But today, not nearly as much. I mostly could walk around and find them a little bit on an angle, which is not fun. I haven't been going to the gym because I can't manage that kind of stuff yet. But I've been doing my PT exercises, and I think it's getting better. But it's been it was kind of scary.
Yeah, it is.
Because we don't want to go through that shit again.
No.
But yeah, so that changed things up. That's why I didn't call my dad last weekend, because I was going to call him that night and got a little distracted by all this other stuff.
Right.
So yeah, that hasn't been fun. Is there anything interesting that happened to you in the last 2 weeks, in the last 10 minutes?
Well, between the podcast we recorded earlier and this one, I will have had a birthday.
Wait, like in the 10 minutes we were talking, your birthday hit?
For the listeners, my birthday would have been the previous Sunday.
Oh, yeah?
For you and me, it's this coming Sunday.
All right.
And,
To celebrate your birthday, I'm going to be playing some board games with some friends.
Just before I came over, which, again, for the listener, was a week ago, I started getting texts from my family about, are we going to get together for this weekend? It's like, here it is Thursday, and you're asking this question? But that's kind of typical.
Yeah.
There's actually a reason we hadn't talked about it until recently. It's because, this is kind of a long story. I don't know how much of it you want to hear. But several months ago, when my brother from Alaska was in town, my dad sort of took us all aside. I was down at the farm and I was leaving and I wasn't going to be back before my brother from Alaska was going to leave. So this was the last time all five kids were going to be together.
Okay.
So he got us all together and he started telling us that he thought his health was on the decline. He'd been to the doctor and, you know, certain of his numbers, you know, when you have a checkup, they take your blood and urine or whatever, you always get numbers. And a lot of the numbers that indicate overall health were getting bad and they weren't getting better. And the doctor didn't know how they were going to get better. In particular, he was concerned about kidney numbers related to his kidneys. The doctor said, well, you know, eventually we might have to put you on dialysis. But for my dad, that's super scary because just about everyone he's known personally that got on dialysis was dead within a year afterwards kind of thing, including my mom. So he's telling us all this to sort of prepare us because he thinks he's on his last legs or whatever. And my brother from Alaska is very upset about this because, you know, he doesn't want to leave. And then, you know, 6 months later, we call him and dad's died or whatever. My sister, who's in healthcare, is a lot less, you know, she's a little more realistic about what's going to happen if he goes on dialysis. A person can live a long time on dialysis. And I feel that way too, but it was a heavy conversation. This was several months ago. So then later he starts having other health problems.
With my cats, we just switched what food they were taking to take care of their kidneys.
He started having other health problems, and probably 4 weeks ago now, he was actually in pretty dire straits. I was kind of shocked.
Went to the hospital.
Yeah, he did go to the hospital. I was kind of shocked at how, and when I went there, I was really surprised how bad off he was. But what they did, what they realized was that he needed to have a heart valve replaced. Mm-hmm. So they did that. And since that happened, it was probably a month ago, I think, or 4 weeks ago.
It feels like it's been a while, yeah.
But all of his cardiopulmonary issues vanished.
Nice.
Pretty much all of his renal issues vanished. The whole thing about him possibly going on dialysis is gone.
Nice.
But after all that was fixed, like a freaking miracle, with just this surgery to replace his heart valve, because he'd already had it replaced once before, like 13 years ago, with a pig valve. And it was going bad. So they just, like, replaced it again.
Killed another pig.
And now it's like all these problems he was having are gone. Mm-hmm. But he immediately started having other prostate problems. Not like cancer or anything, but just like the normal. He's 75.
No, I just love the idea that the new valve somehow caused prostate problems.
No, I don't know why it happened, because he wasn't having these
problems
before.
Probably coincidence, but yeah.
But so anyhow, so that kind of, we were all so happy that all this other stuff was taken care of, and then it was kind of a bummer that this was happening.
How old is he?
75. Okay. In May, he'll be 75. So I think none of us were talking about getting together, because it's like he's still dealing with this, and it's like, well, you know, he probably doesn't want visitors.
It would overshadow, and yeah,
and not going to feel up to it, whatever. But he sent a text right before I came over, talking about, you know, all of his numbers being so great, and you know, he's feeling so good. He still hasn't had this situation taken care of, but I think he felt so happy about this good news. He thought, well, are we going to get together this weekend? But we'd all kind of planned other things, because we just didn't think that was going to happen. And so, you know, I said, well, we can wait until you're feeling better. You know, we don't have to do anything this week. And I think he felt, I think he felt kind of bad that we weren't planning something, but we don't care about that stuff. We can get together a different time. And sometimes the weather's so bad, we don't get together for, if people don't remember, my oldest brother's birthday is on Valentine's Day. And then my birthday's 2 days later. And we'll get together and celebrate it together on a weekend. But sometimes the weather's so bad in February, we don't celebrate our birthdays in February. We have to wait till March or something. So it's not a big deal. But I think he felt like he was, his health problems were getting in the way of us. But I tried to assure him, hey, let's cool. You know, we don't have to. Well, also the weather, by the time people hear this, it'll be the last weekend, was better. It's like 40 degrees or 35 degrees or something.
Yeah.
Which in Iowa, when it starts getting like that, you can almost go out without a coat on, you know.
Oh, I'm excited.
So he was talking about that. It's like, no, it's okay. We can wait. And I think my oldest brother, he said the same thing. So by the time people hear this, I may or may not have gone home for the weekend, but I don't think we're going to. I think we're going to do that later.
I will say this. If you told me you can pick something, you're going to be wrong with you. It's either going to involve your heart or your kidneys or your prostate. I would absolutely pick the prostate.
Well, yeah, especially if
prostate sucks, but in terms of mortality, that one's much less.
Especially if it's not cancer. It's just like the normal things that men go through when they get that age.
But so this is, I'm trying to get my head around this lately. I mean, I talked last episode about how, like, I'm probably just assuming my parents are immortal until one of them dies. But, like, it's going to happen.
Well, yeah.
And it's not going to, I mean, like, this, I keep using this as an example, but I've thought through the numbers, and the odds are I'm losing my father before I lose another one of my cats.
That's
I
sad.
Because he's 85.
True. Yeah, sad, but probably true.
I mean, he and Ezzy might have a run for who dies. But I mean, like, so part of me, every time this stuff happens, I'm like trying to, but I'm also like, you know, you kind of need to prepare.
Well.
Because it all, spoiler alerts for your parents, but you know.
But when for dad, he owns a lot of land.
Yeah.
Not a huge amount, but that's going to have to be something we deal with.
Oh, yeah.
So as soon as it comes up, that immediately comes to mind, because it should, but then you also feel like, why am I thinking about that? I don't want to think about him passing away and us having to deal with this stuff, but it is a thing.
Yeah, and this is why everybody needs to have a goddamn will.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to have end of life, the living will shit worked out, end of life care things. And everybody needs to clean up their fucking house and get rid of all the shit they don't need and their children don't need anymore.
Well, see, he's done all that.
Good job.
He's done all those things.
We haven't done any of that.
Because he wants, you know, he doesn't want us to be burdened with a whole bunch of stuff afterwards. He also doesn't want us to fight over things, but I think he's starting to figure out we're not going to do that.
And it is hard to say. Like, I don't think me and my siblings will either, but like.
Well, I've been surprised by families doing it.
There were aspects of it that I think estranged my family and the other siblings when my grandparents died, but also when my other grandmother died, who the one I didn't see very often, like there was legit people like pushing each other they were fighting over a dresser physically and stuff like that piece of furniture. Yeah. There are parts of that family that don't talk anymore because of that.
I've had that happen
in certain branches of my in-laws very much. Like, it's
Dad's done so much ahead of time to talk about, well, do you want this?
And
you
yeah.
That it's become pretty obvious that we don't have major disagreements about that stuff.
Yeah.
And really the only thing that he's got that's of significant value is the land itself, which he's already got a will about. And the fact of the matter is, when we were together talking about it and talking about, you know, how it was going to probably come out, one of us kids has helped him a lot in helping him build his house and all this stuff. And like, if we found out he left it all to him, we'd be like, well, that tracks, you know, because he's just done so much.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We are totally not interested in any of that stuff and that drama.
I am always weirded out by the idea of inheritance is something you're entitled to.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think any of us feel that way about anything.
I have gotten into, this is of sentimental value for me and I'd like it, but it's also of sentimental value for someone else. And I ran into a lot of this in earlier days with a lot of childhood things of mine. That I later found out, well, yeah, they were childhood things of my sister's first.
Well, another thing
And I was I used to be a little pissed off about that. I got over that because I didn't have any kids, so there was nobody to, like, pass these things on to. And she had a kid, and that was great. But at the time, I was like, well, fuck. I came second to all of these, so I don't get any of this? Like, come on.
Well, another aspect is, too, that if one of the siblings, you know, except, I suppose, for the brother that lives in Alaska, most of us, if something is in their house, we will see it.
Yeah.
It's not going, it's not disappearing, you know? So I don't know. Yeah. It's really not a big concern, all that stuff afterwards.
We occasionally speak of that kind of stuff. There's a picture that my father's mother made a painting she did that was always in our house. I don't know that it's a very good painting, but it's a painting she did of a spot in Alaska where they lived, and there's a little boy. It's a dock thing, and you can see lots of driftwood and stuff. And there's a little boy in a boat in the front facing away, and that's my dad. And that, for some reason, that picture just means a lot to me. So, like, I would like that one. And nobody else in the family cares, so that's fine. And I think my sister's got a couple of things, but I'm like, I don't. And worst case scenario, if I couldn't get these things, anything I wanted, if I got none of it, I'd be like, well, that kind of sucks, but okay. I mean, like, it's just not a...
Well, I mean,
It may be because I don't have people to, like, pass things down to.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, there are things that I've given, things that Mom gave me that I have no one to give them to.
Yeah.
And so my brother from Alaska, who has kids,
he's
come down and I said, this is a... Well, like, there was a coin that I discovered had been in the Wright family for generations. I don't know why. It just had been.
And you want to keep that going.
Right. Yeah. So I gave it to him. I said, look, I don't have anyone to give this to. So there was things that Mom had given me that I would normally pass down, but I don't have anyone to pass it to. So I said, you can take this, and hopefully one of your kids will want it. But, you know, I mean, I could keep it. It's in a box, you know,
but it's
just taking up space. I'm not going to look at it. I'm not going to use it. You might as well take it. And if it ends up getting sold or lost by your family, that's fine. But the odds of it getting passed on to someone is higher.
Yeah.
If you have it, and he was willing to take it. So, you know, we talk about these things. Interestingly enough, last year, a cousin of mine, a first cousin two times removed, passed away, and her son, who was obviously a second cousin once removed.
Checks out.
He's got some stuff in her house that pertains to the ancestors that we have in common. And he never married, never had kids. And so, and he knew I did genealogy stuff and that I try to take care of the family stuff that I have. So he asked if I wanted some of it. So I was up there, this will be 2 weeks ago to the listeners, at the house, taking some of that stuff off of his hands, portraits.
They were gone at the time, so it was much easier.
No, but so that's something that happened when we were talking about the last 2 weeks, that's something I did, is I went up and
stole things from a distant.
No, he there were specific, like one of the things is a chair, like a kitchen chair,
uh-huh.
But it's super old, but it's in, I mean, it's beautiful. It's like the workmanship is great. And it's one of those chairs that's got like a woven, the seat is like a, you know, you can see through it. It's like
I think it's a woven chair,
it's completely intact. It's not damaged
in
any way.
That's impressive.
And he said, what he said was that there's a collection of chairs and a table. And when one of the ancestors died, they split up the chairs
mm-hmm.
and gave the table to somebody. And I know I've seen that chair before. So I've been in someone's house who had one of the other chairs. I don't know. I don't think it was my grandmother, but someone did.
And there's a prophecy that if the chairs are brought together again.
But now I have this chair. I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Forever.
But it's a pretty cool old chair.
Three chairs were made for dwarven kings.
So, yeah, I mean, it's... But I'm acquiring all these things, these genealogy things and these old heirloom things, but I don't have anyone to give them to, so I'm going to have to make a plan somewhere down the road about what's going to happen with all this stuff. Stuff my grandma made. I mean, not made. Like, she was... You know how you can...
I'm sure there's a small and desperate museum somewhere that will take them.
Well, I don't know. I mean, some of these things aren't... It's nothing like that. Like, there's this thing we put out every Halloween that is a...
It's called a pumpkin, dude. I mean, we all put them out. It's not unusual.
My grandma liked...
Jack-o'-lantern?
You know how you can get, there are sculptures, and you can get them, and they're not painted or fired or anything.
Yeah, you
can paint them and put them in a kiln. Okay, so she...
Greenware, or, yeah, that kind of
stuff. She had a friend who had a kiln, and she would go over and do this stuff. And there's this sculpture of it's like a large pumpkin, and there's a witch sitting on top, and she's got a black cat, and when you put a light in it, her eyes light up, and the cat's eyes light up.
Mm-hmm.
It's the coolest thing. It freaked me out when I was a kid, but she made two of them, and I've got both of them, and we put them out on Halloween. To me, they have tremendous meaning. I just remember going over to her house and to stay there, and she'd have it out on Halloween, and I'd sleep in the living room on the floor, and she'd shut the light off, and then the witch's eyes would be glowing, and the cat's eyes would be glowing, looking at me, freaking me out. But at the same time, it was kind of cool. Do you know what I mean?
No, you're weird.
Well, anyhow, so I've got these. I don't think anyone else is going to care about them. But when I'm gone, they're like,
we'll bury you with them. It's fine.
No, it's stuff like that though that makes me sad, because I know no one's going to want them, and no one would buy them. I don't think.
I mean, at Goodwill.
You think? Someone might?
Oh, yeah, totally. People buy cheap crap like that all the time.
I mean,
how much are you, like, $2, $3?
I'm not bothered about it, that happening, mm-hmm. about it being sold at Goodwill or anything. I would sooner it go to someone who thought it was cool, but I know no one's going to, so.
But somebody there will think it's cool.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
True. I mean, it's a little kitschy, but people are into that.
Oh, it's so neat, though. It is kitschy. But that's what makes it so cool.
I'm pretty sure my house had things like that.
And my grandma, you know, her initials are on the bottom of it, RW and stuff. Mm. It's like, oh, that's really cool. But anyhow, so I've got a lot of stuff like that that I know that my brother's kids aren't going to want. Nobody's going to want it. I sometimes think about what would happen if
I could have come up with a good celebrity RW. I was going to toss that joke out, but I couldn't get one.
Anyway, this is kind of morbid to think about, really, isn't it?
It is. I think about it a lot. But the older I get, I'm becoming a person who gives very little shits about my past. Like, I'm very much more in the now. And I find that I'm cool with that, but I feel bad that I'm cool with that.
Why? I mean, what's the point, really?
I feel like I'm betraying something. I don't know. Because, I mean, it includes, like, relationships and stuff.
Like,
friends that I've grown apart from, I'm like... Yeah, okay, fine. Like, loved ones, like, I feel like I should be more sad about the things I have lost or whatever, but I'm like, no.
Hmm.
I got what I got now, and I'm cool with it.
I don't know.
Ultimately, I think it's probably a healthier way to live, but...
Yeah, I guess I don't really think of... Of course, then again, there's not much I think of in my past as something I've lost.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, well, I didn't really lose anything. I mean, even my mom, there's a sense in which I lost her, but she's not really gone. She's still with me. I still think about her. You know, I can, in situations where I wish I could talk to her, I can imagine what she would say. And sometimes the thing I imagine, that's pretty much what she'd say. So, I don't know, things change. You know, you move on from certain things, but, and you do lose things, like actual physical things. But I think one of the great things about the human imagination is that you only lose things in kind of a limited way, actually. And you know, some things that slip away from you, it's because that's just what they do. But some things stay with you, and there's no reason to, I don't know, for me personally, there's no reason to feel like it's completely gone, I guess. So.
Wow. Like, we still have a lot of episode time left, but that totally felt like the end of a very special episode of the Magical Talking Hat. Can you do that speech again at the end?
I didn't realize I was doing a speech.
Oh, totally. No, there was a slow zoom in. The whole deal. That was absolutely...
Okay.
It was beautiful, man.
Yeah, whatever.
I was doing a lot of different versions of it in my head. Like, like I was like very dramatic, like stage play. And then there was at one point when it was Kyle from South Park, like his Today I Learned Something thing. It was one of those. Like, when you lose someone, they're not really... They'll always be with you. Some other shit I watched recently that was like, yeah, no, they're with me all the time here. And I was like, eh. Speaking of, you haven't seen the end of The Good Place.
I have not.
Do it.
I'll get around to it,
I'm sure. It's going to be a while until you can do it for free. But made me cry again.
Oh, did it? Mm.
Made me cry.
I don't know if I need crying.
Only one time. I got misty a lot. Very satisfied. Very satisfied with
it. Oh, good.
It did super well.
Good.
I'm glad. And I am so good. It got out beautifully. Like, it was a good show, and it had good stuff in it, and it finished on a high note, and like it feels very it didn't go on too long. It didn't have a lot of, like, this section was problematic or whatever. Like, it was just really good. And it was of a good enough size that it can just stay that. It didn't outstay its welcome.
It's a pretty optimistic.
But not stupidly so. Like,
no,
it backs it all up.
Right. That's
and
right.
I'm constantly just fascinated. It's the same thing with the Ursula Guin's Dispossessed. I keep talking about how it is some pretty heavy duty socioeconomic and political discourse, mm-hmm, disguised in a very compelling story. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is the same thing. I learned a lot of moral philosophy.
Oh, sure.
In The Good Place,
yeah,
which is a sitcom.
Right.
That was funny and clever and interesting, but it genuinely, and I don't mean taught me like important lessons for life. I mean, whatever. I mean, genuine philosophical concepts and compare and contrast of those and how I feel about different schools of it.
Sure.
Like, and some of it was because literally Chidi was telling them, but there are other ones that they just sort of snuck in places. And I'm like, and just amazing performances,
yeah,
by amazing people.
Sure,
I mean, everybody on that show should be so proud of how they did. And it introduced me to actors that I'm totally gonna love following.
Well, it's clear that they liked what they were doing.
Oh, absolutely. They really believed in the last episode had, at least because we watched it on Hulu. And they had, I guess on NBC immediately afterwards, they had like a, because it was an extra long episode, and I think it ended up being like 45 minutes. I don't know. It was something that didn't cut off at the half hour. So they had like 13 minutes of the cast getting together and talking about the finale. Mm. And that was very moving, and they were very serious about it. And like, there was a lot of, they're very thankful because, like, they're like, I mean, Ted Danson did this whole thing about Darcy Carden. He's like, I'm so happy that I know this is just the start of our friendship. That, like, this show is ending, but we have become friends, and I know we're going to stay friends. And
Oh, that's nice. You're wonderful.
And
that's nice.
Darcy Carden and Kristen Bell kissed on the lips again for no reason, which I didn't mind, but it was odd. And it felt maybe a little contrived, but the way they did it was beautiful, and they were very happy, and everybody in it was good. Yeah, no, that show is just tight. I've already watched most of it twice. I will probably go back and watch the whole thing again. It's great. And it's...
I think
you never can tell, but I feel like it's a show that's going to age just fine.
Yeah, we'll probably watch the whole thing again once it's done.
It's just... I think it works a little bit better bingeable.
Yeah,
because it has so many twists and turns, and you get caught in things of saying, I don't think I like where this is going. And then, like, two episodes later, you're like, oh, never mind. This is, I love this.
Yeah, right.
We had to get there from here, and because it does so many wiggles.
Right.
and so many great quotable lines. And I still say, oh, dip. and I'm really getting into saying, mother forking shirt balls. I finally got a coworker to start watching, and she's like, yeah, I've been going around saying fork me all the time lately. And we have a specific emotional state now that Trish and I will talk about with each other, which is such and such gives me a cheaty stomach ache, and like that's a specific kind of thing. And it just is so clever, and they worked really hard to keep their continuity working. Like, there's not a lot of contradictions in the show,
right.
Which is a thing for me because I'm that kind of nerd. So it's just, it's good stuff. And yeah, they did the ending really well. I also saw the ending of Elementary.
Oh, yeah.
They did that really well in a way that I didn't think they were going to.
Hmm.
It's very weird. We had the second to last episode on 1,000 different cliffhangers. And I was like, we only have one episode left. How are we going to do that? And what we did is we jumped forward like 3 years, talked about how we resolved all that, and did completely different shit.
Oh.
And to a large degree, it was sort of a victory lap. Like, we had drama in there, but it never lasts long. And it was a lot of just revisiting concepts and characters and how people ended. And it ended in a place that I was really pleased about. Because, again, it was very... relationship focused, which was always the thing I liked about that show, because the murder mysteries in that show were dumb as fuck. so I was happy with that too, so that was nice. We're watching Avenue 5 on HBO.
It's a weird
sci-fi comedy about basically a spacefaring cruise ship that has a problem so that it can't get back to Earth. Because its trajectory's off or whatever.
Mm.
And they're trying to cope with that. And it's got Hugh Laurie and Josh Gad and Lauren Critchlow and just a hell of a cast.
Mm.
And it's very goofy and silly. And it feels to me like a very limited run thing. So I'm like, I'm enjoying this, but I don't think I'd like it as an ongoing show. It's getting a second season, so I don't know what the fuck that's going to mean.
Mm.
But. We'll see. We should draw things. We've managed to kill a surprising amount of time in this episode. I don't know how we did that.
We finished watching Black Sails again. And
oh, yeah?
I remember one of the things that they do is, well, the end of season, the first show of the next season often, you know, it doesn't really end on a cliffhanger, but it ends on something. Ooh, what are they going to do? And then it's a lot of it happens off camera. You know what I mean? It's like, well, this happened, and so now we're going to do this. That's kind of annoying about the show, but other than that, it's awesome.
I'm also finishing up season 3 of Rick and Morty, and then I'm going to be done. Damn it. The show is really depressing.
Jazz wants to know, what are the pros and cons of the concept of heroism?
What are the pros and cons of the concept of heroism?
Well,
I'm not brave enough to answer.
See, here's the thing, and... You know, you've brought up how you're not interested in stories about honor and things like that. I've heard people complain about heroism, too. But then when I ask them what they mean by that, it's like, well, I wouldn't like that kind of heroism either. Or honor. You know, a lot of honor is about revenge and someone does a bad thing, you have to do a bad thing back. It's like, no, that's not that's not what honor was when I was raised, and that's not the kind of story I like. So there are various definitions of these things, and it's kind of hard, like pros and cons. I mean, to me...
What's heroism, I think, yeah, is a very tricky place to start.
Yeah. Well, for me personally...
Yes.
I don't know if this is useful or not. But to me, there are things that a person can do that are morally obligatory. There are kinds of things that you're just expected in society to do. You're not going to get an award for doing them because everyone's expected
morally
to...
or ethically?
Oh, gosh.
Because for me, that is an incredibly important distinction.
Yeah, you're right. It is, though. To me, it is, too. Let's stick with morally.
All right.
Let's just do that.
Okay.
Then there are things that are morally laudable, but not obligatory.
Okay.
For example... No one's going to think you're immoral for not rushing into a burning building. However, if you do it, then that's going to get you some kudos.
Sorry,
right?
That was a visual sign. I gave a thumbs up when he said, if you do it.
So if you things that are morally laudable but not obligatory are heroic.
Okay.
And so to me, if you have a story where a person... And I prefer it if it's an ordinary person, not some high-born person necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
But an ordinary person who lives in an ordinary place, and suddenly this place is faced with an extraordinary threat. You know, if it helps me if it's like a metaphor for some existential thing or whatever.
Yes.
And this ordinary person rises to the occasion, so to speak, to face this threat. That's heroic. You know, there are a lot of things... that I would not consider heroic. Like a revenge narrative is not heroic. Or like Westerns where the lone hero thing often does not strike me as particularly heroic. I mean, he might be doing something that's morally, where he's risking himself.
Yeah.
But it doesn't qualify as morally laudable because his motivation is almost like a death wish or something.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So that's not heroic.
And I like this definition. And I'm very glad we stuck with morally, because I think that's appropriate. Because here's the thing with her. My definition was essentially going to be standing up, taking a risk for something good or right that you believe in when there is something at risk by doing it.
Right.
Particularly if it's something that others are not necessarily inclined to stand up for. And the thing with both of these and why I think morality is because you know how I am about morality. I think it's all subjective.
Yeah, as do I.
And I think heroism is 100% subjective. And I would go to... I do want to pause for a second here. You seem to be approaching it when you're getting into your more specifics as the pros and cons of the concept of heroism as a narrative device. I read this as the pros and cons of heroism in the world.
Oh.
Like of people being like that. And, I mean, we can speak to both, but we should make sure which we mean and what. Because I feel like my answer to this becomes heroism is 100% pro, but highly subjective.
Yes, that's why I define it the way I do,
so
because it
heroism
allows
you to... is good, but there's a lot of things that one person would consider heroism that another
person
wouldn't.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think that has to be allowed.
Yes.
I think we have to sort of allow that in the world because that's
well,
the way the world works.
Well, and then it sort of becomes almost semantic at that point.
Yeah, I
because it's like standing up for something good. Of course that's good. And we all have subjective answers of what
that's
good.
Good.
I mean,
that's right.
It's very which means that answer, while I think correct, is also not that useful or interesting. So let's pivot now to as a narrative device, because that has the potential to be more interesting.
Well, sure. but also, when you're thinking of it as a narrative device, you're not so much asking about the heroism itself. You're asking about the impact that story has on people hearing it, I think.
Yes. Well, and I think it becomes interesting if you deconstruct the subjectivity.
Mm-hmm.
Heroism becomes interesting if you wanna if you feel the need to if you gotta back up why it's heroism. If it's not assumptive.
Well, yeah, it's like explaining a joke.
Well, but a lot of interesting stories come from the idea that, hey, this thing we consider heroic, let's look at it a little bit more closely. Sure. Maybe it's more complicated than it seems.
Right.
Yeah. Because I feel like there is a chance for it to get boring otherwise.
No, I agree. I think heroic,
because the basic heroic arc, we know it, and as long as we're not confused about whether it's heroic, it just happens and great, the end.
Well, yeah, but that's true. But I think heroic narratives are quite ancient, and I think
Campbell was, he'd be like 90 now or something. That's pretty old.
No, I mean, I think heroic narratives have probably existed for all of the 300,000 years of human existence, and I think the reason people told these stories, I don't think all people in all places always needed heroes.
No.
You know, there wasn't always some threat requiring someone to do something that was morally laudable, though not morally obligatory. However, the story of a person going above and beyond the quote unquote call of duty,
yes,
that has a way of accentuating the importance of that duty.
Yes.
Right.
It is arguably the simplest and oldest moral lesson.
Yes, exactly.
Like,
well,
this person did this, and it wasn't always easy, but it was right, and they are awesome because of it.
But also, if this person can do this in an extraordinary way in extraordinary circumstances, it's a simple enough thing for us to do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and it glorifies it.
Yeah.
And so it implicitly says, you should be like this.
Yes. But
not necessarily in that specific action.
Sure, but I think in a broader sense, it's celebrating the social nature of humanity in general. Like, we get along because, you know, in a given group, there are so many things going on. You know, there's trust, right? There's integrity in terms of how you fit in with the group and you know, whether or not you're fulfilling a role in the group. And how true you are to that role, or if that role changes, how it changes. There are people offending one another and making accounts so that they don't continue to offend each other. The sociological dynamics in any group are so amazing and complex, but it's all undergirded by this sense of deep connection that the hero, especially the very earliest hero narratives, just celebrate that was the thing.
Yes.
And the hero embodies it, but it only becomes problematic when the hero embodying it becomes, you fixate on that person and not the larger principle,
or the heroic circumstance becomes institutionalized.
Yeah, yes, right.
Because that's the thing. When the morally laudable becomes obligatory, it's no longer heroic.
That's right.
And you can get very caught in being heroic is what you do. And so you should do that at the expense of whatever else.
And this
becomes a thing. Like, heroism has to be a choice.
Yes.
And it can be a tough choice, and it has to, on a certain level, be, I don't want to say okay, but valid to not make that choice.
Right. Well, and there's other things that...
Because otherwise, if it wasn't valid to not make that choice, it wouldn't be heroism.
That's right. But there's other ways that it gets perverted, too, where it turns into a class thing, right? Like... The people who are heroes are in this class.
Yes.
And the other people are in a different class.
When I do it, it's like this. When they do it, it's like this.
Right. Or to do something heroic proves that I'm better than you.
Yes.
And I deserve to have a crown or whatever else. So
or if something comes with adversity, it is automatically heroic. That's the one I really like.
Yes, that's true.
If I'm saying something that the general public hates, that doesn't mean I'm a fucking idiot. It means I'm a hero, because it's hard to stand up to everyone else. I'm sure it is. Doesn't mean you're not a fucking idiot.
But think about the things that most people, I mean, all of these different ways that people set up heroes, like you were just saying, when someone says something complete, really unpopular, yes, and they think it's heroic, or there's class heroism, or there's the hero, the lone hero of the Western, all these, yes, different ways. But then there are the stories that it's really hard to find someone who doesn't think it's heroic. For example, someone falls on the tracks in a subway, some guy jumps down there and covers the person up. Pretty much everyone thinks that's heroic, and it is. But why? It's because what's happening there is the connections between human beings is being manifest in this extraordinary, yes, thing that's happening. And what do you expect's going to happen when that guy gets back up on the platform and they said, "Why did you do that?" And what heroes almost always say is, "Well, so and so would have done it for me. It was just the right thing to do." It's not just the right thing to do.
No.
It was an incredible thing that you did, but that's what the hero thinks.
Yes.
Because the hero knows this is about something deeper and bigger,
yes,
than just me.
And that's,
which is what makes them do the heroic thing.
And people conflate this whole standing up for what you believe in makes you a hero. Depends on what you believe in.
Right.
Like that's not. Sticking to your guns when your guns are shitty is not
right.
Heroic, but again, it's hugely subjective. But yeah, that very kind of thing of putting others in before yourself, risking yourself for others. There's a lot of basis for heroism there. I was just earlier tonight, 1 week ago for your listeners, watching a video that was John Mulaney, and he was talking about the New York Post and how ridiculous that newspaper is, but also that they have categories that they have ranked in their headlines, and they're like, and the best thing they have is angel, and somebody's referred to an angel when it's a kid who died. Those are angels. And if they're not, but they went, and then like a little bit further down they have hero, and hero by New York Post definition is basically any man that does his job. So they were like hero tutor teaches kids after school. Yeah, like hero firefighter, well, puts out blaze. Well, yeah, that's what he does.
You mentioned before about a person putting others before themselves. But there's another element to that, because certainly we all know people who, quote unquote, put others before themselves, and they're not being heroic,
yes,
at all. They're being martyrs or whatever. Here's the thing.
Well, that the concept of putting others before yourself is very subjective. You can do an action,
right, but
that seems to do that, but your motivations are not to put someone before,
sure,
yourself.
Sure, but think of why the hero says, "Well, I just did what anybody would do." That's what the hero always says.
Yeah.
The reason the hero says that is because, yes, they're putting. They both are and are not putting something bigger than themselves.
All right, I'm going to do it this way because you're going to love it. Putting the community ahead of themselves.
Of which they are also a part.
Yeah.
And in other words...
Not some other community ahead of themselves,
no, but,
of course.
But there's a sense where the hero doesn't want to live in a world where someone wouldn't do this.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So they're not just doing it for someone else. They're not just doing it for some esoteric greater good. This is the world they want to live in. So they're doing it for themselves too. So the dichotomy between self and other disappears. Not one doesn't overtake the other. The individual doesn't overtake one or the other. Actually, they don't. The distinction doesn't so much disappear as they're both there, but they're in a complex feedback relationship where you don't know where the one begins and the other ends. So it's a false dichotomy, self and other. And in a heroic act, and I think
in this little small community anarchism thing, we're not getting back from
in
this.
In the heroic act, and I think in the best heroic narratives, that dichotomy is blown away, and you see the truth, which is there are individuals and there are groups, but they're not at odds with one another. They exist in a feedback loop that where one doesn't erase the other, one doesn't overwhelm the other. They exist as one thing together, as a whole. And that's what a good heroic narrative celebrates, and a good heroic act celebrates that too, in my opinion.
This is why everyone hates moral philosophy.
Yes, well, you know, a lot of people, when they analyze heroism, it's about like the Westerns and the lone hero and honor. And that's why honor gets scandalized that way, too. But I don't think you have to look at heroism and honor that
way. And a lot of depictions of heroism and honor both instill a lot of rules and restrictions to it
that then
make it stupid.
Yes, exactly. I completely agree, but that's not the only way to do it.
No.
And certainly in human history, it's not the only way it has been done.
Yeah. All right. That's it for us, people. tune in next time when, I don't know. I mean, we'll have another episode. I don't know what'll happen in it. But listen, find out. It could be great. Junk!
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.